We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildebrandt. Joining me over there, my friend and compadre in the heart of the Midwest, the one and only Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how are you?
I'm fantastic. I feel fully justified for naming yesterday, October 24th, Scotcheroo Saturday. The dogs weren't as salty as you had anticipated. I can roll tape on you saying, if a team is going to blow out another team, it's going to be Minnesota over Michigan. I feel fully vindicated in my existence. I slept not all that well because baseball let me down, but here I am, ready to join you in celebrating what I am calling Sweaty Toe Saturday.
Sweaty Toe Saturday. Wow, what a vision to paint here.
That's
bright and early on a Sunday morning or Saturday morning, or I guess it's not Saturday morning.
Sunday morning, it's okay.
Bright and early on a Sunday morning for some, on a Monday morning for others. We welcome one and all. Don't forget to check out the Patreon at verballers.com. Before we go any further, then I should just...
Oh, wow.
Get this out of the way.
Into it.
This is a fast-moving show. We got a lot to cover, but two very important tidbits as we round the corner into, I guess, the last full week of October.
Yeah.
First and foremost, we've got some big games next weekend. October 31st. You know what day that is?
Halloween.
That is Halloween. You got it right. It's good. To commemorate that occasion, you and I are going to be doing something we like to call the Solid Verbal Live Scream, Dan. Live Scream. More information forthcoming. We're going to preview the nightcap. We're going to talk about all the action that was. Again, it's this coming Saturday, October the 31st. It'll be in the evening. It'll be available for our Patreon subscribers. So more information to come. Certainly over the course of the week, but we're really excited to do this. You can be dressing up. You can do a costume party.
Absolutely, I am. I'm absolutely dressing up. I'm excited to see what you look like. I've been told you're getting a red camera. You're going to be in 8K. Is that true?
That's exactly right.
Yeah, I'm dressing up. We're still figuring out what the solid toddler is going as for Halloween. Still workshopping ideas, but quite excited for the first ever Solid Verbal Halloween Live Scream. Got some interesting plans here.
Speaking of interesting plans, we should also talk about the show we're going to be doing on Friday, which we've had in the laboratory for quite some time. As you know, the Friday shows are space-themed here during the season, our UFO show. This week's UFO show is going to feature an interview with the star of the movie Interstellar.
The robot.
No, not the robot.
The fun, wacky robot.
No. Matthew McConaughey will be
what
joining the Solid Verbal. That interview will air on Friday. He's going to talk about his memoir, Green Lights, which I've had the good fortune to read all weekend and have been unable to put down. It's a really good book. So
nice.
Going to talk about that. Obviously going to talk about his beloved Longhorns. And of course, what would it be without me asking a random interstellar question? That's what we're here for, right?
A random interstellar question.
We'll see. We'll see where it goes. I don't want to.
Matthew, at 39 minutes and 14 seconds, you very clearly state that the turbo neutrons are going to send you three galaxies away, when in fact, it's pretty clear it's two galaxies. You've been probably avoiding this question.
So we're real pumped about that. We've been trying to have Matthew on the show for a number of years now, and finally worked out this year. So that's going to be coming your way on Friday for all subscribers.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to get access to that one.
Hell yes.
Why don't we start off our week 8 recap, where we always start off. Let's have a listen to those week 8 reverbs.
Hey, Dan and Ty. This is Eric from State College, Pennsylvania. The air just smells a little different today because the Big Ten is finally back. We are.
Hey, this is Brad in Honolulu.
Dan, Ty, it's Jack. Northwestern.
Hey guys, it's Daniel. Used to be from Oklahoma, now from New Mexico.
Dan, Ty, Chase from Louisville.
Dan, Ty, this is Steve from New York City.
This is Shelby from Boise.
Hey guys, it's Cole in Tuscaloosa. Just a friendly reminder, as a 27-year-old, that I have now watched Alabama beat Tennessee 14 years in a row, and that is now over half my life. Smoke them if you got them, Tide fans. Roll Tide.
Hi, I'm Dan. This is Luke from Mobile. I'm probably the 50th Alabama guy to call tonight, but smoke them if you got them, baby. Roll Tide.
KU, you guys are so bad.
So last year, Les Miles asked who K-State is. Do you think he knows who K-State is now?
Some quick trivia for you. The last time KU beat K-State, George Bush was the president, and Twitter was 2 years old. Go Cats.
Always good to get a good net crack game, especially against the Florida State Seminoles. Go Cards.
I'm going to tell my grandkids about the time that Rutgers went 1-0 in the Big Ten. Sing us a song, Shanna, man.
We've been beaten. We've been blown out. We've been mocked. We've been counted out. No one willing to put any respect on my boy Greg Schiano. Are you rah-rah?
Move over, Arkansas. America has a new favorite team. Rutgers.
Remember when Sparty was a playoff team?
We're going to need a dude alert for the entire Notre Dame defense and for Dan to do a dramatic reading of the pit drive chart. Go Irish.
This is Seth Granger from Columbus, Ohio. Watching that first half of the Ohio State football right there, there were some flags and some ref ball, but Ohio State has a 24-14 lead. I feel a little bit bad for Nebraska, but speaking of Nebraska, that Luke McCaffrey kid is a beast.
I may be colorblind, but even I know that it's weird that the Tulane Green Wave are wearing blue.
Proud Badger alumni Jason here in Salt Lake City, and Grant Mertz is making us ask the question, is the backup better than the starter?
I want to point out the sense of Midwestern innovation displayed by Wisconsin last night, who threw 5 touchdown passes, 4 of whom were to either a tight end or a fullback.
Army has played 7 different quarterbacks this year and is 6-1.
After winning a bet with my boss for the Ole Miss Auburn game, I saw a table at the bar that ordered a bottle of Rumpelmintz. That's got to be rough. War Eagle.
We talk a lot about good Bo Nix and bad Bo Nix, but did Ole Miss just get beat by serviceable Bo Nix?
Tank safety for Heisman. In the year of hurricanes, natural disasters, and pandemics, you guys forgot to mention my boy Hurricane Hank Bachmeyer bringing the storm of the Boise State Broncos back to college football. Let's go, Broncos!
You smell that? Smells like another Boise State win on the blue. Woo!
Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream until Dobbin Jeter sacks you in your dreams. Go blue.
Boy, this Penn State offense sure looks bad this first half. Who's your offensive coordinator?
Kurt Schrocker.
I always thought the idea of GPS chips and footballs was taking things a little bit too far. Although, maybe it's time.
Does Penn State have a scoring touchdown too quickly problem?
9 Windiana, still possible.
Penn State missed almost as many field goals today as Rice did in one single kick. Shout out to the quad doink.
2020 may change a lot of things in our lives, but what hasn't changed
It's fourth quarter, James Franklin, baby.
All right, Dan. A lot of passion in those calls, as per usual. We appreciate
adding in
everyone.
The Midwest, really.
Yeah.
Is that Scotcheroo frosting atop the emotional Rice Krispie treat?
Yeah, it was. Well, we're going to start off here momentarily talking about all things Big Ten. 408 Verbal One is, of course, the reverb line. For those of you who are new listeners to the show, people call in on a Saturday afternoon, evening, early morning, really early Sunday morning in some cases, to talk through what's on their minds about their respective teams and stream of consciousness, you know, just react to what we're seeing on a game day. For me, Dan, real quick, react to what you saw on Saturday.
Well, the reason
what were your takeaways?
The reason I said salty toe Saturday was we had a bunch of toe taps. We had a bunch of punt stories. We had a bunch of field goal stories, both good and bad. And we just had a bunch of nerves at the end of games, at the end of halves and big moments that, I don't know, your fingers, your palms, your feet, your knuckles, your toes, everything. Everything just clenching up and nerve-wracking, Ty. So that's why I said sweaty toe Saturday. But a joy to have the Midwest back with the Big Ten, and we'll have the MAC soon, and across this great land. It was the wall-to-wall banger college football Saturday that I was really hoping for all year, and wish it had ended better with baseball, but I think we have to start with the Big Ten, don't we?
This is not a baseball show.
No.
What happened to the Dodgers? I didn't see. What'd they do? They lose?
They were up 7-6 with two outs in the bottom of the ninth, and they managed to give up two runs to a nobody hitter and an error to end the game. It wasn't
so
fun. They
pulled in Oklahoma.
Oklahoma won their clunker. Well, they wasn't even a clunker yesterday. Can we talk Penn State, Indiana? A clunker duel, if you will.
It was a dual clunker. Indiana wins the game 36-35 in overtime. If we could, I'd like to rewind just a few days back to when you said something like, you're picking Indiana?
Yeah, that was your one salty dog. I give it to you. Who didn't play well. You didn't see this Indiana performance coming for as much as you want to be
that's
looking
not true.
Into your
that's
tie
not true.
Crystal ball.
That's simply not true. That's simply
you said,
not true.
Indiana's going to look poor. They're going to take advantage of short fields from Penn State and Guppy missed field goals and pull it out on a crazy possible DVD logo caroming off the bottom of the TV screen. That's what you had in mind for this game?
What a weird freaking game, right? Yeah. What a weird freaking game. Indiana wins it on a two-point conversion as Michael Penix Jr. runs around the left side of the line, dives outstretched with the nose of the football. I don't think he got in. They ruled it on the field as being a good conversion.
Right.
There was an overhead shot that they only showed once that I think, for me anyway, was conclusive in him not getting in. Regardless.
Well, can you fully tell when the ball hits the ground, though, from
you
the
can't.
Overhead?
You can't. No, you can't. It looked like he kind of scraped across the goal line instead of actually breaking the plane.
But when it's ruled on the field as a touchdown, it has to be conclusively not then
no,
in the replay.
I understand it.
Yeah.
So it was ruled on the field as good conversion. They had trouble overturning it. Didn't see enough evidence. It was very, very close. One way or another, a hell of an effort by Penix just to put himself in that position, fully
Definitely.
Outstretched to get the W, a big win for Indiana. Of course, it probably doesn't go to overtime if not for Devin Ford.
Yeah, how do you feel about this?
Oh my gosh, what a weird play. So Penn State was down. They were down for most of this football game.
Mm-hmm.
And late in the game, they mount a comeback. They're up one. They get the ball back deep in Indiana territory. And Tom Allen, I think, said as much in the post game that they have a play, a signal, where they basically say, old video game style, let him score.
Ole, yeah.
The Ole defense, let him through, let him score. Devin Ford rushes unabated up the middle, gets past the first down marker, and at that point, there's only two or three yards of buffer between him and the end zone. And it was like, he didn't compute it until it was too late that he should have just gone down instead of scoring the touchdown. In so doing, he gives the football back to Minnesota, down 8 with 1:42 left on the clock. They mount the charge. They score. They get the two-point conversion. Then in overtime, Penn State scores. Indiana scores as well. They decide screw it. We're going for the win. They get the two-point right. conversion. They win the football game. Now, with all that being said, histrionics aside, Penn State outgained Indiana 488 to 211. They went 9 of 17 on third downs. They possessed the football for more than 40 minutes. They lose the football game, Dan. Talk about your kind of weird double clunker odd circumstance. Penn State did a lot right.
Yeah.
Or we don't need to talk about Sean Clifford and the play calling right now. They did a lot right.
Mm-hmm.
If they had not made that boneheaded mistake late in the game, I think they ultimately go on to win. But what were your thoughts watching this?
Also, if they don't make boneheaded mistakes early, they go on
right,
to win.
Right, right, sure.
Right? It's the Will Levis gets the ball ripped out of his hands in the red zone, right? That's a lost fumble. We have Sean Clifford locking in on a receiver and just throwing over him. He stepped into the ball. It wasn't even bad fundamentals. He just overthrew a dude poorly, and that set up a short field touchdown. I believe they scored a touchdown on that drive. They go down 17-7. I don't fully put it on Penn State's kicker missing that. It was like a 57-yarder at the whistle. 25 yards. Obviously, Penn State had opportunities so that they don't need to count on a field goal to win a game where they essentially dominate on offense, even with their own offensive issues. You got to hit 25. You got to hit 25. That, you know, I'm not putting everything on the kicker, but you got to hit 25 as a college kicker. It was very strange at the end. It was Devin Ford. That's his name.
Devin Ford,
the guy who got the majority of the carries with Journey Brown out. He seemed to realize at the 2 yard line, momentum be damned, that he had that like George Costanza. Was I not supposed to do this?
Yeah, was that wrong? Was should I not have upon? Said that? It was fine
should
at my
I
last
have
job.
Gone in?
Yeah.
So, all that aside, Penn State has offensive issues to clean up. They made plays. The best of Sean Clifford is really impressive, but it's spotty. It's here and there. He's super impressive running the ball, and I guess will need to be given the uncertainty at running back. But situationally, Penn State was not ready to win this game early, in the middle, late, and Indiana couldn't run the ball, couldn't throw the ball, but they were right there to accept any mistakes and turn them into points and success. And I'm with you that I'm not definitively positive Penix was in, but hell of a play either way, hell of an effort. And you just have to be there. You have to be present. If a team is going to try and hand you a win, you have to accept it. And that's what Indiana did. Great story.
No, it's true. It's true. So a big win for Indiana. Look, they've been knocking on the door for a while to try and knock off. Again, like we said on the preview show, one of those top four teams in the East, be it Ohio State or Penn State or Michigan State or Michigan, where we'll go next. So good for Tom Allen. This is a nice win for them. Michigan wins on the road in, I thought, impressive fashion over Minnesota, 49-24. Big Joe Milton, baby, huh?
Yeah. Big Michael Barrett. Big everybody. Donovan Jeter.
Yeah, man.
Quiddy Pay.
Big Joe Milton, 15 of 22. 225 and a touchdown. He ran for another 52 yards and a touchdown. He's huge. He's got a rocket for an arm. He looked, I think, most importantly, very comfortable out there. That was what you look for. A new starting quarterback. Does he look like it's moving too fast? Like, there was a little bit of casual dress James Franklin there. Just a little bit. Just a smidge. He was very cool and composed in the pocket.
Yeah. No, I came away crazy impressed from Michigan. They had the explosion plays on the ground. They were happy to call similarly structured slants where the running back would sort of leave the backfield and pull a linebacker with them. And Joe Milton was just hammering Ronnie Bell over and over again. He spread the ball out really nicely. Wasn't asked to do a ton with his arm in terms of downfield. But if you're a new quarterback trying to get used to being thrust into conference play immediately and being looked at as a potential difference maker to get over a pretty large hump.
Right.
May I recommend the Minnesota defense? May I recommend the front seven? Now, Minnesota was down players. You know, the offensive line was, I think they were down two starters and specialists, whatever. But with what they lost, especially in the linebacking core.
Yeah.
May I recommend the Gopher defense, especially, I mean, at home doesn't matter, on the road doesn't matter, I guess, in 2020. But Michigan, as a good team should do, was able to find all sorts of soft spots, be it on the ground or through the air, not try to do too much. I mean, I don't. Did you see like when Joe Milton, I'm showing people who are watching the video on Patreon, on verballers.com, where he would, there would just be sort of a fullback or an H-back cutting across, and he would just, boop, little two-yarder that went for 11. They were just happy to take open grass. And the big thing to me was no turnovers. We saw that as a struggle last year with Shea Patterson getting used to this newer system early on in the season. Michigan played clean. The offensive line looked good. I was thrilled with Michigan. I'm curious to see about the winter wonders on the outside, because that's ultimately what they're going to be judged by, the type of playmakers and speed against their best defenses, against Wisconsin, against Ohio State, kind of like that. But everything I could have asked for from Michigan on the road in week one.
Oh, yeah.
As somebody who said, if a team blows out another team in this game, it's going to be Michigan blowing out Minnesota. I couldn't be happier to sort of stretch out my shoulder to pat myself on the back.
You're really proud of that, aren't you? You're really.
I gave you the opportunity. You the chance to definitively state a correct opinion.
You're going to take Indiana? What?
Your Indiana had a 4% win expectancy at the end of that game.
They won, didn't they? Scoreboard,
baby. You saw it. You saw this one.
Scoreboard.
Yeah.
I'm glad you brought up the Minnesota defense, because that matchup, I thought, was kind of lost in the shuffle of Big Joe Milton getting the start, right? It was almost an entirely rebuilt Minnesota defense against an entirely rebuilt Michigan offensive line. And, you know, I don't know if it's more line.
Somewhat. Jalen Mayfield, Aiden Hutchinson. I mean, there are pieces there that have been solid for Michigan.
Granted, but mostly rebuilt. And I thought they performed admirably. You know, only two tackles for loss. They gave up one sack, zero quarterback hurries, if I read the box score correctly. And moreover, they just got a push. You could see watching the game. They got a push. Minnesota's defense does have to get better. And look, what does this mean for Michigan? Maybe we could talk about this, you know, after the fact here, but tough slate ahead. Yeah. This is a big one to get out of the way, but they do have a road tilt against Indiana. They still got Wisconsin. Penn State will hopefully improve by the time they play. And then there's obviously the big one, December 12th on the road at Ohio State. So good game for Michigan. Good game for Mo Ibrahim, right?
I was going to say, Rashad Bateman had a really nice catch in which he was interfered with, pulled down a longer grab, and Tanner Morgan looked kind of lost, which is not a crazy surprise given the coordinator turnover and, you know, the offensive linemen, they were down, but given his experience, I think I expected a little more.
Ohio State 52, Nebraska 17, the Buckeyes poured this one on late to win by the margin. It was 24-14 at half. Ohio State.
It was close early. It was 14-all.
Yeah, yeah. Ohio State won the second half by a 28-3 margin. They pulled away. Justin Fields near perfect, 20 of 21. He connected with Garrett Wilson, with Chris Olave as his primary targets. Both of those guys went up over 100. You know, we could talk about Ohio State until we're blue in the face. I'm sure we've got more to say on that front. I came away feeling like Nebraska's defense actually looked better than it did a year ago. They seem better to me.
Especially against the run. They got a good push against what I thought would be a slightly better Ohio State offensive line. Yeah, you're right.
And the other thing of note here, I don't really know what Scott Frost is going to do with Adrian Martinez and Luke McCaffrey, but those are two playmakers that you could line up places on the field. And I don't know. I'm curious to see where he goes with that. I think there's a lot of talent in the backfield that he can work with. Nebraska, like, they need fewer fumbles. Like, let's be real about this. They gotta be more responsible with the football. But despite the score, despite a 35-point loss against Ohio State, I actually came away feeling better about Nebraska than I did going into it.
Nebraska down one of the receivers they figured they would have in Omar Manning, I believe. And that was something I talked about in our Big Ten preview, is who's catching balls from Luke McCaffrey and Adrian Martinez outside of Wandale Robinson. Yeah, you're right. Luke McCaffrey and Adrian Martinez, both impressive feet-wise. I don't love switching guys in and out. I know Adrian Martinez had to come out because of some sort of helmet issue, and Luke McCaffrey came in. Would have liked to see a little bit more aggression from Nebraska early, especially when that was a closer game, knowing that they needed to throw everything at Ohio State to be in it late. But otherwise, I mean, when you have the phrase you used, near perfect, is the operative one. When you have Justin Fields, when you have Garrett Wilson, who looked promising last year and looks to be fulfilling his potential, and Chris Olave, it's going to be almost impossible to beat Ohio State. Now, J.K. Dobbins to Master Teague and Trey Sermon feels like a noticeable drop. And I don't know how much that comes around to haunt Ohio State, because at times when the passing game wasn't fully there last year, J.K. Dobbins just ruined teams, ruined defenses. And they don't have that. It appears right now. There's sort of a thunder lightning, but not real heavy thunder, not really fast lightning at the moment with Teague and Sermon. So I'm curious about that. That's nitpicking. The thing I'm also worried about, though, is can you run a little bit on Ohio State? Can you push around this front a little bit? I know they stopped Dedrick Mills, the true running back for Nebraska, but those quarterbacks were able to get loose. What does that mean moving forward? Unclear, but we're used to just impossibly deep, talented, effective front seven play from Ohio State. It's game one. There's improvement to be had. Something to file in the very far reaches of your Big Ten brain.
Far reaches of your Big Ten brain. Obviously, excuse me, as we said at the top of the show, big game next week against Penn State.
By the way, I'm nitpicking a team that won by 35.
Right. No, it's splitting hairs. Total splitting hairs. Ohio State's on the road at Penn State next week. After Penn State, it's Rutgers, it's Maryland, it's Indiana, it's Illinois, it's Michigan State, and then they close out the year with Michigan.
Yeah.
Not to say that this is any revelation, right? We knew that Ohio State was going to be the top dog, the projected top dog, I should say, at least in the Big Ten East. But in looking at the schedule now, based on just with what we saw in week one, you get by Penn State is pretty smooth sailing.
There's a big three in the conference, it looks like, with Michigan, Ohio State, Wisconsin.
Wisconsin won.
Sorry, Purdue Big Four.
Purdue Big Four. Wisconsin 45, Illinois 7. This one was on Friday. Graham Mertz, also like Justin Fields, putting in a 20 of 21 throwing line. 248 through the air, 5 touchdowns. He looked awesome in this game. I don't know how much you can read into it, being so it was against Illinois, but it was his first start. He looked incredible. He made throws at a number of different levels. Can really spin it, I think I'd say. I hate to be cliche and say it, and you know, he can make all the throws, all these cliches we're used to with quarterbacks, but he did seem to give them a little extra pop at that position, which would be a huge revelation for a Wisconsin team that I think is still kind of figuring out its ground assault after JTT left for the NFL. And if you have any kind of viable vertical passing threat in that offense, it opens things up in a way that we haven't seen since Russell Wilson. It's been a while.
Yeah, there have been moments, but no, this is a Wisconsin team who has needed a winter wonder at quarterback. Guys have been good. Guys have had good games. But if Graham Mertz, and this is Illinois tie, this is Illinois football, not necessarily the true test of what Wisconsin can or can't do on offense, but Graham Mertz looks so confident in his ability to scan the field, look off safeties, go deep, go intermediate. Him to Jake Ferguson, I believe, was pretty electric.
Yep. Seven,
if you saw those passes.
Seven catches
over the
seam. For Ferguson.
Yeah. So that was a really interesting connection. We'll see what it looks like, the Wisconsin offense looks like on the outside. We'll see what that running game looks like, because so much of Graham Mertz's success against the better teams, I don't know when they have Michigan, but I believe it's in Ann Arbor, I believe.
I'll check it out.
You're going to need to be able to stretch the field if you're not going to have that dominant ground game, if you're not going to, you know, have Jake Ferguson on every play open for 18. That to me is interesting, but I don't know how you come away from this game anything but blown away by the potential of Graham Mertz moving forward. 20 of 21 it's not normal time.
Yeah, and he was perfect for most of this game. The game is in Ann Arbor on November the 14th against Michigan. And to echo your point, I was following along in the Solid Verbal Discord channel for our Patreon subscribers, and some of the Wisconsin fans in there were like, yeah, we're really not used to this as Wisconsin fans.
Heismertz.
Yeah, we're really, really not used to this type of setup. So good opening stanza for him. We'll see where it goes next.
Yep.
How about this
one? Run through the Big Ten?
Yeah, I'm going to run through these other ones real quick. We had Rutgers 38. Michigan State 27 with 7 turnovers.
Yeah.
Never a good thing. We had Purdue.
It's never going to be as bad as this, Michigan State.
No.
If you are going to take, I shouldn't say that. I mean, they just might get trucked by somebody else. Yeah. But seven, it's not going to be as bad as seven turnovers. And good for Rutgers taking advantage, holding on. And it was Noah Vedral, the Nebraska transfer at quarterback. Yeah.
We had Purdue 24-20 over Iowa. Iowa had a black swan event of its own. 10 penalties.
Yeah.
You have to go back 2 years to find the last time that team committed 10 penalties in a football game. Purdue wins 24-20 without Jeff Brohm and Rondale Moore.
Without Jeff Brohm, Rondale Moore, Iowa's secondary might be an issue. Usually it's for other quarterbacks and passing games. Might be an issue. We saw David Bell go off for the Hawkeyes this season. I hope they can clean that up just as somebody who likes watching good football. Offense is going to take a minute. For every 27-yard impressive pass downfield or creative play call, there were drops, there were issues, there were inconsistencies, there were overthrows. It's week one. Everybody gets better. But what Iowa needs to work on is it seems to be crystal clear.
And finally in the Big Ten, Northwestern 43, Maryland 3, Dan.
I moved to the Midwest. I moved to the greater Chicagoland area, and this is what I bring.
Maryland,
offensive competency.
Maryland got leveled in this game. Talia Tungavailoa started. He threw three picks. We did get to see a little bit of Lance Lejeune, a favorite Frenchman. But, you know, Peyton Ramsey.
Asterisk, not a Frenchman.
Not an actual Frenchman.
Yeah.
Peyton Ramsey, Drake Anderson, Isaiah Bowser led the way for the Cats. A pretty strong rushing effort for their part.
I think it's the first time Northwestern won by 40 since 1804 in the Big Ten. So strong start for Northwestern. Concerning for the Terps.
A little bit concerning. It's going to be a long year for the Terps. Okay.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Let's go to the Big 12, Dan. There were a couple big games, two really of note. And let's start at the top with Oklahoma State 24, Iowa State 21. Spencer Sanders finally back for the Pokes. Looked okay throwing the football, had two picks, but really made an impact on the ground. He rushed for 71 yards and a touchdown. That combined with a nice effort from Chuba Hubbard provided the main offensive threat, the main offensive vehicle in this game for Oklahoma State. The real differentiator, though, was that Pokes defense. The Pokes defense was really good. Brock Purdy couldn't get it going. Breece Hall had 185 yards, which looks and is very impressive, but it was on two runs, basically, of 70 and 66 yards. The rest of the time he was held, I think it comes to under 3 yards per carry. So,
Subtext, it's really good to be able to rip off 70 and 60 yard runs.
Absolutely. This is
I'm
me.
Good. However you can get to, what do you finish, 10, 11 yards per carry?
Yeah.
Do your thing.
I'm holding my arms up on the video. I'm like, look,
yes.
I'm with you. Granted, I'm just saying, if you are Oklahoma State and you get slashed twice for long runs by a running back,
yeah,
the rest of the time you're holding him in check, that's a pretty good defensive showing. And I thought the defense was really good. It held its part here in this football game and provided enough of that wiggle room to give Oklahoma State the win.
Yeah, win your clunkers and survive Breece Hall, who might be the best and most dangerous offensive weapon in the conference.
That's my
add-on. Spencer Sanders still had, he had a tipped interception. He stared down a receiver. I think a safety just saw him from Thursday, looking down the left-hand sideline, I believe it was. And so that's something that needs to be cleaned up, because I think we now have to consider Oklahoma State the class of the Big 12.
I have the note written down here. They have to be the front runner, right?
They're the front runner. Bedlam is early in November, I believe. And where is Bedlam this year? I actually have this in my notes, so I'll look it up really quick. It's in Norman.
Okay.
It's Oklahoma State on the road.
Right.
So we'll see what happens there. Iowa State, they again struggle with Oklahoma State's defense, especially Brock Purdy. Chuba Hubbard and Breece Hall in the same game is so damn fun. I don't know if you saw that, the Chuba Hubbard sort of reverse navigate through the line of scrimmage touchdown run. That's a Waze run, Ty. That is when Waze tells you left on Orchard, right on Johnson, left on, and he made it work.
Three minutes early.
To his destination.
Yeah,
he got there. He got to the end zone 3 minutes early, thanks to Waze. And I love watching battles like that, even with their ugly moments. Really cool to see the Pokes take a pretty, I mean, depending on what you think about Kansas State, I believe, take a nice commanding lead in the Big 12 race.
We had Oklahoma 33, TCU 14. The Sooners jumped out to a quick 17-0 lead. They never let TCU get close. Clean game for the Sooners. No turnovers. Thankfully, no fourth quarter collapses. I know we've been making that joke the last few weeks, but nothing like that in the fourth quarter. I saw in one recap the word mature. Very mature performance.
Yeah.
From Oklahoma. And on the TCU side, look, we love Max Duggan.
We love Max Duggan.
I'm glad he's out there.
He's getting abused by that offensive line, though.
A very uneven offense for TCU. Outside of Max Duggan, thus far, we haven't really seen a complimentary running game. The line is troublesome.
Oh, we saw it against Texas.
They
ran really well versus Texas. Yeah.
Saw it against Texas. Okay, you're right. But an uneven offense at TCU has sort of been a recurring theme over the last few seasons. And it seems as though in the early going here, we're going to see more of the same.
Yeah, the defense seems okay. The problem is, and we've mentioned this a couple times this season, they'll give up bigger plays. They're going to try to hide where bigger plays are available, and quarterbacks aren't always going to find it. Spencer Rattler, especially as it relates to Marvin Mims, found the grass against this TCU defense. Yeah, I think it's procedural for TCU. It's situational. It's discipline for the Frogs. This is not a good team. This is a TCU team. I'm sorry to say to you, it's not going to be their year in 2020. But let's credit Oklahoma at the same time, because they've struggled, especially on the ground on offense. They struggled finishing off opponents and to win comfortably by 19 on the road, no matter their opponent's season. Impressive step forward for the Sooners, who are going to need some help to end up in that conference championship game.
We had Texas winning 27-16 over Baylor. They led 27-3 after three quarters. They're very clearly the better team. It's not lost on me that the line here was 10.5 and they won by 11. I don't know how the hell Vegas does it, but
good on you, Texas.
Another subject. I don't know if you have Texas thoughts, Dan, but I have some Baylor thoughts.
I don't have a ton of Texas thoughts. I thought Sam Ellinger did a good enough job. He did a really good job. He had a nice game considering the up and downs of his 2020, the ups and downs of his 2020. I think looking at this game in the context of Baylor thoughts might be the move. What are yours?
I know that Baylor's had to overcome a lot so far this season. It's not lost on me with the COVID that they've had to deal with. Obviously, a new coaching staff. It takes time to kind of settle into those things.
Mm-hmm.
The offense downright stinks.
Yeah,
it's a bad offense. And it is simply not good enough to be competitive with that upper crust of the Big 12. It's just not. And so you come to a weird place very quickly, as we did in this football game against Texas, where you've got a coaching staff with no confidence in the offense. And suddenly you're punting from the Texas 30-yard line, which, suffice to say, is going to piss off the fan base 100% of the time.
Of course.
And I saw that, and I'm like, wow, Dave Aranda really has no confidence in this offense. Not like anybody else does either, but he really, truly has no confidence in this offense that he's going to punt from the Texas 30. It just blew my mind.
Yeah, as fun as Charlie Brewer has been at times, it seems like his ceiling is relatively low, probably for physical reasons, considering the wear and tear he's had these past couple years.
Brutal, right?
It's a tough watch. It's a tough watch. I don't know what you do if you're Baylor, whoever you want to go to at quarterback, or if you want to stick with Brewer, considering where the program was when he took over and where it has come now, making the Big 12 championship game last year, making a New Year's Six game. The offense, I don't know what you do. Whatever it is, it's not working.
And to round out the Big 12, we had K-State over Kansas in a blowout, 55-14. And Texas Tech wins it late over West Virginia, 34-27.
Phillip Brooks, I think, returned two punts against Kansas for touchdowns.
Yes.
For K-State.
Yes.
Will Howard took a nice step forward at quarterback. Yeah, I mean, it's Kansas, so we're not going to lay on it any longer than we need to. What was the final game you mentioned in the Big 12?
Texas Tech 34, West Virginia 27.
New Legatron, Austin McNamara, punter, 87-yard punt. For the Red Raiders?
I love the name Legatron. Gloss? Legatron is probably my favorite nickname.
Is that Zuerlein? Is that who it is in the NFL?
Zuerlein's got a couple different nicknames, but Legatron, okay. I think.
Legatron's fantastic. West Virginia expected more. Letty Brown is really good, but inconsistent on offense and defensively had some issues against the Red Raiders. But all the same, good for Texas Tech for bouncing back after looking listless at times early.
Let me move over to the SEC. Alabama 48, Tennessee 17. The result here, not much of a surprise, Dan. Did you feel it was more crockpotting or more boat race? Which camp are you in?
It was something like 21-10, not long before halftime, right? It was not fully out of, you know, we've had those 28-0s, 3 minutes left in the first quarter Alabama games in the last couple of years. I guess crockpotting, Tennessee made some plays. The bummer to me is obviously Jalen Waddle, who leaves opening kickoff with, a bad ankle injury. I think that's what it was, but either way, it's a bad lower.
He broke his ankle on the opening kickoff. He's brutal. Done for the year, as Nick Saban said at halftime. Does it meaningfully affect Bama's offense in any way? I think we know the answer to this one as well. Probably not.
You don't think losing Jalen Waddle affects Bama's offense in a meaningful way? Depends against who? Against Clemson or against Mississippi State?
Well, if we look at the receiver position, Alabama is never short on talent. So,
sure.
Yes, it hurts to some extent. Losing Jalen Waddle means less to Alabama than it would to a team like a Notre Dame. They just have such crazy depth at that position.
Sure.
They're going to get John Metchie to step up. Slade Bolden is going to be their new number three receiver. He came in, he had like 94 yards. Hadn't had any action before this, but had 94 yards in the game. I think they're going to be just fine. They still have Devontae Smith. They're going to be fine at wide out. They may have to rejigger a little bit of the play calling, but I don't think longer term it has that big of an impact on them, even though I love Jalen Waddle and he's ton fun to watch.
Right.
The bigger story on that front is probably Mac Jones. Mac Jones is a full-on stud at this point. It is not smoke and mirrors. It's not the system. It's not just, it helps to have that kind of skill talent around you. No doubt about it. You can't really undersell what he's been doing. He's been lights out, very cool, calm, and collected back there. Makes all the throws, can really spin it as well. And, you know, he's got Alabama in a position where they're, I think, far and away above the rest in the SEC. They are the class of that conference.
I still think having Jaylen Waddle is a gravitational element that, as capital G great as Devontae Smith is, and what John Metchie has looked like early. I saw him pull down an incredible catch in, what, double coverage against Tennessee. Jaylen Waddle is that true gravitational player that freaks defenses out as a special teamer, you know, a return guy, as wherever he lines up on offense. Alabama goes from impossible to figure out who to defend to really, really difficult without Waddle. And I think that's a difference maker if we are on the edges, on the margins, against a team like Georgia, against a team like Clemson, against a team like Ohio State, against a team like Florida, potentially. I mean, the Florida defense is not anything, you know, super scary. But on the margins, to have somebody like Jaylen Waddle, that's where it's going to hurt. It's not going to hurt against, although we can talk about Alabama, Arkansas later. It's not going to hurt against most teams because, like you mentioned, it's a luxury. But that's where, that's that extra little bit, Ty. That's where we could see an issue.
Well, we'll see. They do have talent behind Waddle, and sure, I think they'll be fine, like you said, against most teams. But sucks for him. Sucks for him, to say the least.
Awful, awful. Yeah.
The other thing that I will address very quickly now, we did get some comments I saw on Twitter this week asking why we were so hard on Jared Garantano when Tennessee has other deficiencies.
Totally.
Fair point. Garantano was not the reason they lost this game. It was not like we had seen from a few other previous spots for him where he was making dumb mistakes. He was very good. I thought he had good command of the offense. It was not at all a Garantano thing this time around. There were a lot of things that Alabama was doing that Tennessee just didn't really have an answer for, but Garantano did not play into that. He had a much better game this time around, which is good for him.
Yeah, he was fine. The larger issue is that offense gets off the field way too quickly, and they do not do any alley-oop favors to the defense. In the first half alone, I'm not playing Dvorak, by the way, four-play punt, three-play punt. They had the field goal on 13 plays and a touchdown on six. Three-play punt, three-play punt. They come out in the second half, three plays, and they lose a fumble to a touchdown. Three-play punt, three-play punt. They have that touchdown. They go turnover on downs, turnover on downs. Like, if you are keeping your own defense on the field that much against an Alabama offense that is near historic in its dominant nature, there's no way to keep this game anywhere close. There's no way to give your team a chance like Indiana was able, and trust me, Penn State is not Alabama, but Indiana took opportunities to give their defense a little bit of rest, to generate a little bit of momentum on offense to stay in the game or to hopefully win the game. It just, Tennessee needs to be able to string together a 7-yard hitch with a 4-yard run to keep a drive going.
Yeah.
And this is not a lights out Alabama defense. It's not 2011. That's where Tennessee needs to get stronger, is just scripting out a way to have a 7-play drive, even if it ends in a punt.
Moving over to Auburn.
Yeah.
35-28 over Ole Miss. This was the only competitive game in the early window. All the other ones were blowouts. And what a finish here, huh? Auburn gets the ball back with about 2.5 left. They're down by one. They run 5 plays before Bo Nix connects up with Seth Williams on the right sideline, who makes a great catch and even better run. Scores on a 58-yard touchdown reception. So first off, this game fits perfectly with this ongoing Gus Malzahn motif at Auburn. Just when you think they're down, they're up, and vice versa. But this was a close game. And if not for some of those late heroics, they probably lose. Ole Miss is not a finished product by any stretch of the imagination, but they are dangerous. They're dangerous because of that offense, first and foremost. And you do get the sense that Lane Kiffin just got like...
By the way, their offense is a danger to both defenses and themselves.
And their own defense, right?
No, and their own offense.
Well, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. What I was going to say is you get the sense that Lane Kiffin just got a homebrew kit for his birthday and he's tweaking some of the ingredients to get this thing right. Whether or not he gets there before the end of this season remains to be seen. But I think if you're an Ole Miss fan, there's at least enough to go on here being so that they're competitive against better teams in the SEC. They're scoring points. The offense is fun to watch. It's going to take some time to rebuild this thing in the way that Lane Kiffin wants to. He certainly needs to improve his defense. But again, they were up late. They could have won this game if not for some heroics.
I'm not going to get too far into the officiating in this game. I'm just going to say to Ole Miss fans, I hear you. And I'm going to say to Auburn fans, I hear you.
I hear you.
I hear you.
We're here for you.
Auburn is definitively no better or worse than anybody they've played. I don't know how you make an argument in either direction. But sometimes they're going to win those games. Sometimes they're going to lose. And that's where we are now with the Gus Malzahn experience. Bo Nix made some throws. Bo Nix didn't make some throws at times. I am thrilled with the ability that I have to watch Tank Bigsby on a weekly basis and yeah. Seth Williams on a weekly basis.
Totally. Nice win that's for it. Auburn. 35-28. LSU wins 52-24. They scored 31 first half points. Maybe if not for a back-breaking pick six at the end of the first half, maybe this one's closer. I don't know. But good effort all around for the Tigers. We had TJ Finley starting in place of Miles Brennan.
Did you see how big TJ Finley was and is?
Big Teej.
That's a large dude. That is a large dude who did... who is fine. I don't think he throws with a ton of touch, but he's pretty raw, but he has a hell of an arm. And LSU had a pick six from Elias Ricks at some point, blue chip corner. They were able to, I think Trey Palmer was the one who had the kick return that he fumbled and still returned for 95 yards or sort of bobbled. A really nice win for LSU getting back on track. You're right.
52-24 was your final here. Mm-hmm. And to close out the SEC, Mizzou 20, Kentucky 10.
Yeah.
I challenge anybody to look at Kentucky's box score here.
Oh, why?
And wonder whether all the stats have been loaded in, or not wonder whether all the stats have been loaded in. The Cats couldn't get it going. And you know, Mizzou in particular, they just took all the air out of the ball, Dan, in the second half. They had two drives that went for a collective 36 plays in over 16 and a half minutes. All told, 43 minutes of possession for the Tigers. Kentucky had just 9 drives all game.
Yeah. This is nothing new for the Kentucky offensive experience, or just the Kentucky football experience. If solid zone defense and running the ball is enough to win, they will. If it's not, they won't.
They won't.
And right. I just... yeah, they were not able to generate any momentum. They have basically no pass game. And I know they like Terry Wilson. He's been the architect and been involved in beating both Florida and Tennessee. I understand the weight that carries. But against a Mizzou team who did really well, not one stick, not two stick, but Larry three sticks, put this essentially the entire Mizzou offense on his back. And they controlled the game. They controlled the clock. They controlled the tempo. Connor Bazelak made plays when he needed to make them.
Yeah.
Mizzou is quietly, they're pushing the boulder uphill in an interesting way. I am excited to see what Mizzou can do once we're in like year three of the Eli Drinkwitz experience.
Pushing the boulder uphill.
Yeah, Kentucky's that losable game. I'm glad Mizzou got over Kentucky because of the game a couple years ago. I think it was a couple years ago, the weird ending.
Yeah.
But... Mizzou, they didn't do anything exceptionally well on offense, but they didn't beat themselves, which is what Kentucky likes to count on, to sort of strangle and constrict. Is that the word I'm looking for?
Sure, yeah.
And if you're a borderline incompetent team, Kentucky's going to beat you. Mizzou is showing competence early, which I like.
We had Mizzou pretty low on our plucky power rankings. Now, with Georgia Tech losing handily to BC, which we'll talk about momentarily, I think you gotta put Mizzou up a peg. Shift them up.
How many interceptions did Connor Bazelak throw? I'm seeing zero.
Zero.
I'm seeing zero turnovers.
Yep.
They just refused to be constricted. Great.
Over in the ACC, Clemson 47, Syracuse 21. A little closer than expected. The line was 45 plus, right?
Yeah.
So you got to keep that one in mind. To be within one score of Clemson midway through the third quarter, especially after going down 17-0 at the end of the first quarter, that's a huge win. That's a huge win for them. They were never going to win this game, but that's a big deal unto itself.
They got there with that pick six near the end of the first half, I believe. Another weird Clemson end to the first half. You remember that blocked field goal for a touchdown against Miami?
Yeah.
So I suppose if you're nitpicking Clemson, finish the first half stronger, guys. Yeah, but Trevor Lawrence was a little bit off, and Travis Etienne was sort of in and out of this game. I don't know if you saw his quotes after where he said, yeah, I just had a little bit of Frosted Flakes in the morning before playing. I should eat a heartier breakfast. So that's where his performance and availability was blamed, I guess.
Okay.
And yeah, 27-21 near the end of the third, I saw Dabo got a little bit steamed in his post-game presser, asked, why aren't people asking more positive questions, like, aren't you proud of your guys? Those are the questions Dabo wants. And I don't fault him. He's a softball hunter. But
he is a softball hunter. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, I mean, if Clemson is playing a down game and it's close against a Syracuse team, who I still like their defense a little bit, but their offense has been rough, and Rex Culpepper threw, what, three picks against Clemson?
Yeah.
If you're winning a clunker by 26 points, just like Ohio State looked uneven early and won their game by 35, you're in a pretty good spot. You're in a pretty good spot.
Great hair, Rex Culpepper, though.
Great hair.
Locks
same page.
Of love.
Agree.
Notre Dame 45, Pitt 3. Woo!
Yeah.
Woo!
Didn't watch a second of this.
Did not see this one coming, Dan. It was just 7-3 after the first quarter. I guess I have two main takeaways on the Notre Dame side.
Mm-hmm.
The first being that Ian Book had some longer passes in this game. And, you know, I'm still hesitant to call that a vertical passing game with Ian Book, because there is a quality to the
who did he connect with
passing game.
Where, the Northwestern transfer, right?
Yeah, Ben Skowronek. I'm hesitant to call it a vertical passing threat, if only because there is still a heave it up quality there where it's like, I know I got a tall guy out wide. I'm just going to throw it up and see if he catches it. Which is
it worked for Trace McSorley for a long time.
Well, yeah, and a lot of quarterbacks have gotten away with that. They get away with it in the pro game, too, especially with how quick referees are to call pass interference. So it's not the worst strategy. They just haven't really been doing it. And whether it's Skowronek or whether it's a big guy, a baby Gronk type, if you will, like a Michael Mayer, I don't know who that threat is, but to see a little bit more out of the passing game in that regard was encouraging to me. They're going to need to do more of that, if only to open up other aspects of that offense. So we did see a little bit of that from Book. He had a really good game. And on the other side of the ball for Notre Dame, the defense is just, it's really solid. I saw our friend Pete Sampson over at The Athletic pointed out rightfully that Pitt had seven drives of 10 yards or fewer in this football game. It is also obviously the second week running now that Notre Dame's held a team under 10 points. So good showing for the Irish. I did not see this one coming. They've still got a couple weeks before they get ready for Clemson, but this was a nice way to right the ship after just a really ugly football game against Louisville.
Yes. Did you really not see it coming, though? Like, Pitt has been pretty awful, especially without Kenny Pickett, but outside of Jordan Addison, if you're going to use the word bright spot with the Pitt offense, it's really hard to find it now, especially with their backup quarterback, especially with teams being able to, everybody's been able to pass it pretty much on Pitt with any quarterback of consequence. I suppose it is nice that in a week that we should have seen Notre Dame do better against a defense with issues, that they did better against a defense with issues, although they couldn't really run the ball, but Pitt does play the run pretty well. I don't know if this explains more about 2020 Notre Dame to me, though, if we are comparing them essentially against Clemson and North Carolina.
Right? No.
This is what we expect from Notre Dame. Maybe not 45-3, maybe 28-10 or something like that, decisive against Pitt. So it's better than what I expected. But I don't know if this alters my perception of what Notre Dame can or can't do against a good team.
I don't think it alters my perception either, but
okay.
It does give them a little bit of an added dimension if they've now found this thing where they can heave it up wide, out wide.
Well, like, do you think,
and get more out of that vertical?
Is it Ben or
game.
Bennett? He's pulling a Tom Tommy thing, isn't he?
It is.
It was Bennett at Northwestern.
I think it's just Ben Skowronek at this point.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. At this point, it's Ben Skowronek. He's mature as a grad transfer.
That's right. And he's big kid.
Do you do you think, like, if you were going to go on, like, the Claypool meter, like, how much can he be counted on as that downfield threat against the teams Notre Dame will ultimately be judged against?
No. Okay. We're not talking Miles Boykin. We're not talking Chase Claypool. It's
Big Bill Fuller. Yeah.
No. This is a different circumstance, okay. but it's an option, right? We're pretty far into the season. It's going to be November in a week, and we still don't really know who Notre Dame's main passing targets are.
All I want is a good Notre Dame-Clemson game, and I just want to figure out how we get to that point on the Notre Dame side. That's all I want.
All right. I'm with you. Believe me.
All right. Miami-Virginia?
Miami 19, UVA 14. Brennan Armstrong was back for UVA. He looked pretty good, especially on the ground, but it was mostly the D'Eriq King and Mike Harley show. King had 322 through the air. 10 catches for 170 and a score from Mike Harley. Good game for him.
Yeah.
In this one, we had 10 punts, 2 missed field goals, a fumble, and a turnover on downs. So look at the score. Wasn't like the cleanest offensive, like the cleanest burning offensive showing here was not what we had. Right. But it was a good one for D'Eriq King and especially Mike Harley.
Survive and win your clunkers. Because
all right, have you made the t-shirt for that yet?
I'm in the process. All right. I'm in the process of a win your clunker shirt. Yeah. No, it's a good one. Maybe I also want to do because it's technically tied in, a clunker is like an old beat up car, right?
Like a jalopy of sorts. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to do one of those old fashioned, almost hotel keychains of like you were checking into a motel in 1992. You know, that sort of weirdly shaped pentagonal. Yeah.
You want to make one of those for a keychain that's just.
Yes. It's like what you would receive if you were buying a Dodge minivan, 1993 used Dodge minivan, what they would hand you at the lot that is attached to the keys. I want to make a hotel keychain that says win your clunkers as a reminder to everybody throughout the day. Start their car. All right. Got to be okay.
Win your clunkers. Win your daily clunkers. It needs to be unnecessarily loud, though. That's what we need to get out of.
Maybe we'll offer that to Verballers on the Patreon as an exclusive Win Your Clunkers hotel.
People are like,
keychain.
We're going to have to pay for this? What? Okay.
People want it, Ty. Okay, next.
1914. Other games here that I'll run through very quickly in the ACC, and then we'll talk momentarily about a couple of the other action around college football. We had UNC 48, NC State 21, a huge day on the ground between Javonte Williams and Michael Carter for the Tar Heels. They pulled away with 31 points in the second half, took advantage of 4 Wolfpack turnovers, 3 picks thrown by backup quarterbacks Bailey Hockman and Ben Finley. So good showing here for North Carolina.
If we're going to have a conversation about the best running backs in the country, you know, Najee Harris, Travis Etienne, Chuba Hubbard, Breece Hall, Javonte Williams.
He's a bull.
He's knocking, Ty. He's the North Carolina run game is, I mean, it's NC State. It's, you know, there's your asterisk. But it could be real special. I like watching this team when they're operating.
We had Wake Forest 23-16 over Virginia Tech. They led the whole game. A monster effort, by the way, by walk-on freshman defensive back Nick Anderson, who had 11 tackles, 9 solo, and 3, a hat trick of interceptions in this football game off of Hendon Hooker.
Give that man a scholarship, Dave Clawson. Scholarship. I think he actually mentioned that he is in the spring. He'll be getting a scholarship. Give the man a scholarship. He was all over the place and no longer associated with the Orlando Magic and a woeful ending to an NBA Finals game. So, yeah, I think a little bit unexpected given the heights of what Virginia Tech's offense can look like. And I called Hendon Hooker chunky. It turns out it was in the interception aisle of the box score. Just an ugly game for Virginia Tech and really nice on both sides of the ball, as you mentioned, for Wake Forest, taking advantage of those mistakes that they helped to generate themselves.
Louisville 48, Florida State 16. I may have been a little too bullish on Florida State.
Hold on, stretching my shoulder again. I told you specifically, I said they did not play 4 good quarters against North Carolina. It was a very strange win.
Yeah, Louisville had 569 in total yardage. They pulled away after the first quarter. Jordan Travis, though, did have a cool crossover dribble with a football. I've never seen that before.
Dribbled it twice and scored a touchdown. Yeah.
It was sort of like he meant to do, he didn't mean to do it, but
no.
He looked like he handled that situation better than expected and ran for a cool touchdown, but it was never to be for Florida State. 48-16 in favor of Louisville.
Fun to see the dude trifecta back in action. Malik Cunningham, Tutu Atwell, and Javian Hawkins. Really strong game. It's Florida State. But they did what they should do against Florida State.
And finally, in the Plucky Bowl, we had Boston College 48, Georgia Tech 27, dual threat superstar Phil Jurkovec led the Jerky Boys 145 and two touchdowns through the air, 94 yards on the ground. He was the leading rusher for the Eagles.
The Acura legend.
The Acura legend.
I don't have a lot to take away from this game other than BC, that's another team. They're pushing that boulder up the hill, Ty. It's going to take a minute, but they're pushing it in the right direction.
So some other action here that we'll just rifle off very quickly. Boise State 42, Utah State 13. The Broncos are back, baby.
Don't do this to yourself. Don't do this to this to America. Don't do this to Portugal.
Hank Bachmeyer. Yeah. 20 of 28, 268, and three touchdowns in the Broncos' inaugural game this season.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I didn't know if you wanted to, you were texting me all last night about an apology you had written out on the notes app on your phone for Desmond Ritter. Did you want to perform that here, or is it still personal?
Okay, so we're not going through the Mountain West being back.
I'm just jumping around.
You're jumping around. Siobhan Cordero, by the way, Hawaii?
Oh, yeah.
Could be fun.
Yeah.
Could be fun. Quickly, do you know who's the starting quarterback for San Jose State? Nick Starkel. Just circling the globe. Had a nice game.
Mr. Worldwide.
Mr. Worldwide. Okay, you want to go to the American? You want to go to Cincinnati SMU?
Yeah.
Desmond Ritter, really good at running the ball with the ball in his hands. Throwing it forward. He didn't throw a pick. He was actually pretty efficient through the air. And the big thing is they didn't turn the ball over. And Cincinnati looked awesome against SMU.
42
on the road, right? It was in Dallas.
Yeah, 42 to 13, a really good showing by him. I'm just going to jump around, talk about some of these games. We had Memphis.
By the way, this is an SMU offense that has been really strong these past couple years. And Cincinnati not only played them well, they played them well quickly. I mentioned the Tennessee offense not being able to string together four or five plays. SMU's offense, off the field, off the field, off the field, off the field. And that's Cincinnati, man. The second half of the American season is going to be wild.
We had Memphis 41-29 over Temple. We had UCF 51-34 over Tulane.
Dylan Gabriel with his second consecutive game over 400 yards and five touchdowns and zero interceptions. Diltron, baby. Feel it.
Okay. We had
okay.
Marshall 20-9. Over FAU, we had Army moving to 6-1 with a win over Mercer. We had another.
Wait, what else did Army do? What else did Army do?
Go ahead.
They accepted a bowl bid to the Independence Bowl.
Yeah, great. We texted about this, right?
Yeah.
This has to be the earliest ever bowl acceptance, right?
Yeah. Oh, I always hear, whenever I see a bowl acceptance, I still hear the Tecmo Super Bowl division clinching music. I love that. So yeah, Army accepts the bowl bid. You glossed over the fact that Marshall's probably going undefeated.
Yeah.
I think they'd have to really play down to somebody, but the rest of their schedule looks fantastic. What other of those of the G5 games did you mention?
Well, I don't know if it's technically group of five, but BYU won by 38 over Texas State with another huge game by Zach Wilson, 52-14.
Did you see the throw? He rolled out to his right, threw it. I think his his step in foot, whatever that's called, was on the 50, but he threw it across the damn field to a receiver in motion on the run. It's like a 65-yard bullet, Ty. Zach Wilson, something else.
He's real good. Real good.
App State laid the wood on, was it Thursday night?
Thursday.
Against Arkansas State? Yeah, yeah, really nice day on the ground for App State and obviously on defense. Watch a good chunk of that game. Very strange Louisiana UAB game. That was another one of those 5% win expectancies from Bill Connolly for Louisiana, but they're able to pull it out. It was actually a really interesting G5 day to me. I mean, the Cincinnati SMU game headlining, I'm pulling up everything to remind myself right now. Mentioned Marshall. Coastal Carolina gets the win. They needed it late. They did not have Grayson McCall, the toughest internship in America. I think it was Fred Payton who came in. But Coastal Carolina ranked. And they back it up against a decent Georgia Southern team. You mentioned Army. You mentioned Memphis. Oh, there was something else that really that tickled me, Ty. Oh, did you see the end of Middle Tennessee Rice? Maybe you did, maybe you didn't.
I did not.
Quadruple doink, Ty. The ball was doinking longer than it was in the air. The ball has a zip code on the uprights. It was doinking so long, and Middle Tennessee able to take advantage and win that game. Clayton Toon, nice game for Houston, Ty.
Yeah.
Was there anything else that I wanted to touch on specifically? I mean, Boise State now gets BYU in a little bit. We'll talk about that for the extended show. But no, I think that's it. Oh, because I hit the Nick Starkle San Jose State thing.
Mr. Worldwide, yeah.
I have some dude alerts, Ty. I haven't been doing the dudes justice. If you can play a sound for me.
I can play the sound for you. Let's hear it.
Nick Anderson, who we mentioned, Wake Forest. Michael Barrett, Michigan, all over the place. I don't know if you saw. I think he was the one who jarred the Donovan Jeter 5-yard or 10-yard large man touchdown out of the air.
That was one of those plays, Dan, where Kate was on the other couch playing around on her phone, petting the pup. And I said, hey, Katie, you got to watch this play.
I ran upstairs for Jody. Yeah. Because she was watching it together. Yeah.
Got to watch this play. And there aren't many plays where I do that. But
yeah,
she
definitely
liked that play. It was a fun play.
That's the universe looking down and smiting Minnesota at the same time. Phillip Brooks, Kansas State, Graham Mertz, Wisconsin, Marvin Mims, Oklahoma. Nice to have him step up. David Bell, Carson Strong, Nevada. Really, really strong day. Marlon Williams at UCF. Dylan Gabriel gets that excitement and hype, but he needs a receiver like Marlon Williams. Javonte Williams, I mentioned him, North Carolina. Larry Three Sticks at Mizzou, Ty. Austin McNamara, the punter at Texas Tech. And Javian Hawkins to me. These were our dudes for week 8-ish.
Week 8-ish. So,
yeah.
Look, this is our recap. If you'd like a recap that features some of the local radio broadcasts that were actually in the moment calling these games, we'd urge you to run a search on College Sports Now. Listen to the College Football Rewind, courtesy of our friends over at Learfield IMG College. They do a good job breaking down all the top 25 action, all the action in college football.
Yeah.
Really fun listen. If you also want to get back in on, you know, other college football podcasts or other ways that you can recap the action that was, we appreciate all their fine work. As I did yesterday, I was out and about. I was out in the backyard. Mm-hmm. We had some family over here. I actually ran into a Verballer at Wegmans. It must have been an experience for the gentleman because I had about 18 pumpkins in my cart.
Oh, it was another Select Your Gourd Saturday?
I was selecting my gourds 1 week late, getting ready for this party that we had at my place. And so I had a bunch of pumpkins in the cart as I met a gentleman who listens to the show. So that was cool.
You also left no doubt as to whether it was or was not, in fact, Ty Hildenbrand, right, though?
I mean, it's tough to see who it is wearing the mask, but I was the last clean shirt in the wardrobe was a solid purple shirt. So I wore it, and I think that was the giveaway.
Yeah, I like that. That's cool.
Yeah,
I had a great day myself. Fun day, other than the damn Dodgers, Ty. Ugh.
Damn Dodgers, and I saw Oregon shutting things down because of COVID now.
Yeah, 5 positive antigen tests. So hope everybody quarantines, isolates, stays healthy. Everybody, I think the report was that they're asymptomatic. Hope it stays that way. But yeah, it's unfortunate. Man, it's very strange times.
Indeed. Okay, well, we hope everyone out there enjoyed their weekend. We would urge you to check out verballers.com for more on the Patreon. If you haven't subscribed to the show, please do so as well. You can go to our website, solidverbal.com, find all the listen links there. And while you're at it, sign up for our newsletter, which we send out every Friday. You can also follow along on social media, as per usual. And I guess we'll talk to the fine folks on Wednesday as we get things rolling here, Dan.
Unless you're a Patreon subscriber and we're going with the bonus. I've got some questions, Ty.
Okay.
I've got, you know what we're going to discuss? We're going to discuss the games we are looking most forward to because of week eight, even more so than before, and less so potentially. But you know what, Ty? You have to be a certified or premium verballer, excuse me, to listen to that extended private version of the Solid Verbal Recap Show. How about that?
For that guy over there, my good friend Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildenbrand, thank you so much for downloading, for listening, for playing along with us here in week eight. Cannot wait for what we have ahead in week nine. We hope you'll be there on this next leg of the journey with us. For that guy over there, Dan Rubenstein, myself, Ty Hildenbrand, talk to y'all soon. Stay solid.
Peace.